cloud computing is growing at compound 15 to 20% per year. No sign of abating. So if you think of a computer chip, the only really thing it does is produce heat. As it swaps its noughts into ones and back again, the only physical difference it makes is it produces heat. And that heat has to be gotten rid of. That heat's wasted. I mean, what we do is we package up 480 microprocessors and we take, put them in a box the size of a typical heating unit that you would find in Europe. And each one of those consumes 10 watts of electricity. That means it produces 10 watts of heat, because as you say, you can't get rid of it. But the 10 watt is just heat. So that's 4.8 kilowatts of heat whilst you're doing some processing. Well, you can heat a house with that.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands that are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Today, we have with us Gary Felgate, Chair and Energy Lead at Thermify. Smart green, using energy twice. He joins us from Berlin, Germany. Welcome, Gary.
Good afternoon, or good morning, should I say.
I used to work for an IT company early on in my career, and the latest technology we all were excited about was a 3.5-inch floppy disk with a huge storage capacity of 1.44 megabytes. Give the folks today what that size would mean in, say, document size or a music file. How big is 1.44 MB, or maybe even just a picture?
I would answer it in a slightly different way. I started my career actually working for IBM, and I worked on their supercomputers in upstate New York in Poughkeepsie, and we had $10 million worth of computer to play with between four of us. And it was like, I was so happy. And I think I've got more power on my phone now than that $10 million supercomputer had. Just unfathomable, the speed of change.
So when was that?
I was with IBM. I started in IBM in 1986. I was there for 10 years. I was a rare beast at IBM. I was quite good at maths and I could program in Fortran, and they were moving into the supercomputing in the energy space. And I got the privilege to go out to Poughkeepsie and play with this amazing kit with these really talented people from all over the world. But as I say, I think my phone has more power than that machine has.
And fast forward today, how much data is stored in the cloud, say, worldwide or just maybe UK or Germany where you are?
I can't tell you the amount of data that's stored in the cloud. What I can tell you, I think it was about a couple of years ago, every 2 days we were taking more photos than we had taken in the whole of the world up to that time. It was just this exponential growth of data that's being stored. But one of the things that we're seeing is cloud computing is growing at compound 15 to 20% per year. No sign of abating. Mm-hmm. Everything we see is being done in the cloud. The volumes are unimaginable and insatiable.
So where are these servers located geographically?
Well, they're all over the world. One of the challenges of these services is they get very hot. And so there is a real case for putting them in cooler countries as possible, because so much, they produce so much heat. Mm-hmm. There's another driver here in Europe with data security and government. So, you know, in Germany, German data must be held in Germany. In Britain, British data must be held in Britain. You know, there's a finite amount of space where you can put these data centers. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, as I say, that, you know, cooling them is the real challenge.
Yeah. And I read somewhere that they are kept near the Arctic Circle, some big ones, and near maybe hydroelectric plants. And they, besides being in the country where sensitive information needs to be contained.
That's correct. Some people are exploring putting them undersea. And it's the, you know, it is the challenge of keeping these machines and these data centers cool. you know, what is interesting is, and I'll speak as a layman here, is just that if you think of a computer chip, the only really thing it does is produce heat. As it swaps its noughts into ones and back again, the only physical difference it makes is it produces heat. And that heat has to be gotten rid of. That heat's wasted, and that heat probably amounts to something like 30% of all the energy bills of a data center run by Amazon or a Microsoft or whomever.
Recently, there was research conducted by five scientists from Northwestern University, Lawrence Berkeley Lab, and other independent research labs, which they said the increase in consumption in these cloud storage facilities, which have become as large as football fields, they're becoming more and more efficient, and they haven't actually grown at the alarming rate that they were expected to.
I think that's correct. They have become increasingly efficient. But I'm going to turn that round completely, if I may, on its head and say, what if you could use that heat for good? What if you could turn that waste, that struggle to make it more efficient, which is indeed good? I've worked in efficiency all my life. It's, if you don't use something, it is good. Mm-hmm. But what if you could take that heat and put it to good use rather than vent it away? Because no matter how efficient it is, there will always be waste.
So there are two components. One is the energy consumption, which the big giants are trying to make their processes more efficient, so they consume less and less every year. On the other hand, they generate so much heat, which needs to be cooled down, but you, as Thermify, is trying to use that energy to give electricity or energy to your customers.
Yes, that's what, in a nutshell, you're correct. We're trying to give the heat to the customers. The other driving factor that's happening as we face the climate crisis, as we come up to COP26 in Glasgow shortly, is the need to decarbonize every element of our life.
Could you elaborate COP26?
That is the major conference that is happening in Glasgow, which many world leaders are attending, which is following on from the protocols of the past, which is where governments make their commitments to reducing their carbon emissions. Mm-hmm. As we're speaking today, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom is meeting with the President of the United States, discussing what announcements each of them will make. So that is taking place in November, and it's a real world focus, if you will, for the world nations to try and work out how they're going to decarbonize their economies.
What is your solution?
First thing I would say that all solutions are needed. There's no one solution. Everything is good. From turning the lights off to electric cars, everything. Where we focus is 15% of the carbon emissions in Great Britain. The number in the United Kingdom is fairly representative for those of North America and the rest of Europe. 15% of those carbon emissions come from heating and hot water. Mm-hmm. So it's a significant component. It is roughly the same as aviation. So heating houses and heating hot water in Britain does the similar amount of carbon emissions as the aviation industry.
That's the first time I've heard that.
I know. And
that's a startling statistic.
So this is a great area where you want to reduce carbon emissions.
So your solution kind of reminds me of a science fair contest that my daughter entered into. She was, I think, about 12, and there was an energy contest. She took household high-pressure steamer that we use for cooking, connected a pipe to go into some kind of a turbine made out of a soup can, and that turbine would spin to give electricity, and the water would condense to give you clean water.
Your daughter is ahead of time. I mean, this is...
Be noted, she did not win the contest at all. And it was such an obvious solution for her. And the reason I bring it up, your solution seems so obvious, right? You have heat and energy is never lost. It's perpetual. Why was it not used before this?
I can say this because it's not my idea, I'm the founders, but it's brilliant. I mean, what we do is we package up 480 microprocessors and we take, put them in a box the size of a typical heating unit that you would find in Europe. And each one of those consumes 10 watts of electricity. Mm-hmm. That means it produces 10 watts of heat, because as you say, you can't get rid of it. So it's, the noughts and ones aren't doing anything, other than something that we really want in cloud computing. But the 10 watts isn't produced, it's just heat. So that's 4.8 kilowatts of heat whilst you're doing some processing. Well, you can heat a house with that.
How long can you heat a house?
On a well-insulated house, with that, you can heat it throughout the year and provide all its heat and hot water, running somewhere between, depending on which season you're in, running between somewhere between 2 and 14 hours a day.
I would be happy even if it satisfied 50%, not even looking at 100% substitution to gas or coal or oil at this point in time.
But here's the delight, if I would put it, because in my background is I'm working in climate change, but there's another real social problem that we face in the United Kingdom, and that is that people can't afford to stay warm. The energy bill is too high. Now, in our solution, all of that electricity that's using producing heat is being paid for by the person who's doing the compute, because they want the noughts and ones to flip. And they'll pay for it. And we just charge a market rate. We're not charging anything unusual. We're saying, look, we'll do your rendering for you. We'll do your mapping for you. And you pay us and we'll just do it for you. And you pay us what you pay anybody else. And meanwhile, we get this byproduct of heat, which we can charge what we'd like for. And we're going to charge a very, very low price. So we're in conversations with major cities for houses for less wealthy people to be able to provide them their heating at a much lower cost than they would otherwise be able to do. Which is why, you know, why I think we're a mindful business, because we can actually, as well as looking at reducing the impact of climate change because we'll use less energy, mm-hmm. we will be delivering on a key social cause, which is enabling people to stay warm and have hot water at a price they can afford.
You know, very often, even solar or other forms of renewable energy solutions that are available, they haven't become efficient enough. They haven't been optimized to make it as affordable as our other oil, the gas, and the coal energies. My next question, literally on my sheet, was how much does your thing cost? And you're saying to the consumer, it would just cost the nominal amount?
We're planning on a monthly fee. We're pricing it at what gas prices were in the United Kingdom. Gas prices used to be low in the United Kingdom. They spiked recently. And as you move to electricity, the prices of heating will go up significantly, typically fourfold. So we're pricing it at the price of what gas prices would be. And that's probably around about $70 a month would be a normal price for a household in the United Kingdom to pay every month for their heating and hot water in an ordinary sized house. Mm-hmm. So we're setting our price point, if you will, of about $70 a month for providing that service and maintaining the system. However, we're also intending for those customers in who are more vulnerable, but maybe elderly or on lower incomes and so on, of putting our price point at probably around $35. And that will be decided by the city or whatever with whom we're working with. But we are going to significantly reduce the prices of what people would have to pay by comparison to what an electricity heating system would provide. Mm-hmm. In England, it is said that there's 13% of people are what is defined as fuel poor. That means that they don't have enough money to be warm. In Scotland, that number rises to 25%.